Hey, Ellen, thanks so much for being on the show.
Hi, Deepak. Thank you for inviting me on.
I have a set of rapid-fire questions. How would you describe lobbying in one sentence?
I would say it is the science and art of advocacy.
And if you had to explain that to a layman, like let's say if your 10-year-old walks by, a kid comes and says, like, what do you do? How would you describe that?
I would say it boils down to you are representing a cause, and the cause is either through a company or an association or a nonprofit, and you are either trying to get something passed through the legislature or you're trying to get something stopped in the legislature. And you're trying
And
to change the law one way or another.
okay. And do you feel like the role of a lobbyist is important in the community?
Yeah, I do. Because everyone else is doing their job, whether, it's making widgets or providing a service. Or researching their cause, et cetera. And so you need the key ingredient of a lobbyist to be able to keep your issue at the forefront and to get the attention that you want for it.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Oh, in one word. I'm loyal.
Good answer. Why is it important for the youth to be in government relations?
I think a lot of people, not just young people, but a lot of other people who are older really haven't paid much attention to what is happening and why things are happening. And the way they vote and how it really affects outcomes. So, definitely with younger people getting interested and knowledgeable about the process would just benefit everyone in general because the young people turn into voters and we just need people who are truly informed who are voting. And not people just, I think what bothers me is when people will vote on emotions and not facts.
And how would they be exposed to facts?
Well, I think anytime you hear something, you have to try to find other sources of information. To not just take it from one source, to really try to look around for other reliable sources and be brave enough to look at sources where you think I may not agree with this. But I believe it's better to be fully informed rather than, just deluding yourself again and again.
What was the most momentous thing in your career?
It wasn't the biggest thing I ever did, but it made such a exciting impact in my life to when I was working on Capitol Hill. I was a legislative assistant, and my role involved I had to be a specialist on, several different issues for the congressman I worked for, and we ended up needing to get some legislation put together, and I led that effort. And it was an amendment to a bill, and it was a somewhat controversial amendment as well. So I had to, walk, shepherd this thing through. And the night came where the vote was going to happen, and I got to be on the House floor for the first time while Congress was in session. And to be there and to listen to the conversations that were happening all around me and to really see how the process worked. And it definitely helped that my amendment passed. And it was just a very exciting moment for someone who I was probably 24.
That's awesome. What is the best advice you've ever received in terms of lobbying?
I think it's, I'm not sure if I can remember it being specific, but it definitely was something I learned through observation. I noticed how lobbyists were frequently talking to each other about things and keeping each other informed and looking out for each other. And I really found that to be highly valuable because I emulated that because I watched other lobbyists who I respected what they did and I learned from them. And that was definitely a very important part of how they were able to be effective in their jobs.
And if someone was listening to this and they are thinking of getting into this field, what is it that you learned from your experience that you should probably, you know, warn them about or they should be cautious about before they get into this field?
I think one thing to consider is that, especially, I find that a job like this attracts ambitious people. And I would say most of the people I knew were very just outstanding people, very smart, very hardworking. But there could be issues though with letting yourself get too wrapped up in it, where it just takes over your life and your personal life, and you become just a very narrow person. You could be in danger of losing your other interests. And I would recommend people really try to keep some sort of boundaries, even when you're ambitious and want to do all the things. You know, try to still keep your, you know, if you enjoy going to fish, you know, keep fishing. You know, just don't get so overly wrapped up in it.
That's a good segue. What is your favorite hobby?
Oh, I have a few different ones. I don't know if you could call traveling a hobby, but I really do love to travel. I have since a very young age, and I've lived abroad a couple of different times. I love racket sports, tennis and pickleball. Even if there's a ping pong table around, I'll be the one asking anyone to, you know, come hit the ball around with me. I like to read. You know, just spend time with my family.
Nice. Yeah, I've recently started getting into pickleball as well. It's really cool.
It is. Yeah. And it's harder than it looks.
Yes, it does. What is your favorite music?
I gravitate most toward maybe alternative, but then I also love things like bluegrass, 80s music. Lately I've been listening to Portuguese guitar music because I was just recently in Portugal. So I don't know. I have an eclectic taste in music, I would say. But my
That's
most recent concert was the Counting Crows.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, I love the 80s. And I think we should talk offline about the Portugal
Yeah.
music.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. With that, I just want to ask you a few questions about your childhood. Can you tell us where did you grow up and were you interested in politics, policy? What was your passion then?
I grew up in South Bend, Indiana, and that's where the University of Notre Dame is. And it's a smallish town. My dad went to Notre Dame, and my mom went to the sister school, St. Mary's, and my whole family was very intertwined with Notre Dame and St. Mary's. And I ended up attending St. Mary's myself and graduating from there, which my mother loved. She had three daughters and a son, and two daughters graduated from St. Mary's and one son from Notre Dame. So I think she was pretty happy with those results. And the other daughter, of course, had a she went somewhere else and had a great experience. But anyway, I was interested in politics. I remember probably as young as third grade, I would pick up magazines and newspapers that were in our house because my parents were both interested, and so we would have things around, and I found myself getting very excited when a certain monthly magazine would arrive every month, and I thought to myself, I don't have any friends I can talk to about this. I'm in fourth grade. But I did all the other normal kid stuff too. I played a lot of tennis and soccer, and I loved, pottery, and I played all the kinds of team sports, and but I definitely had this part of me from a very young age.
Nice. And what happened after childhood? Did you get into the field of political science after your high school?
Yeah, I didn't start off as a political science major, but then I ended up switching in the beginning of my junior year. And even though my parents, were very interested in politics, and my mom in particular were active in it, they did not understand why on earth I would major in political science. They didn't really see what could be done with it, and I think they were afraid I was going to be living in their basement or something and not able to find a job. But I had a plan. I lined up in a paid internship with the congressman that started right after I graduated from college. And then that ended up, leading one thing to another from there.
And how did you get that internship? And I mean, more importantly, like, why did you go for it?
Oh, I just thought it sounded very exciting. And the funny part too is, so I called, it was my local congressman's office, and I called them up and just told them who I was, that I was in college and, political science major, and do they have any internships available, during the semester, which would be, in Indiana. And she said, well, the person managing the internship, she said, well, yeah, but I've got something available starting in the summer right after you graduate. Why don't you do that? And I was like, yeah, why don't I do that? That's a great idea. So that's how it happened.
And was that you think was a good starting point to get your feet wet before you jumped into government relations?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I would really strongly recommend people, whether it's, the state level, et cetera. And I've done both. I've worked in state government as well as, the federal government. But I think doing that, you really understand how things are done. So you're a much better advocate when you understand that process. And you also created relationships with people inside, and so you know who to go to, and they know you, and you have a basis, a relationship foundation there already.
And when did you work at the federal level?
So it was, right after college. I worked for three different members of Congress in succession. And then from there, I was approached by a trade association, inviting me to interview for a lobbying position.
Oh, okay. And where was this? association located? Is it was it in
In
DC?
there in DC,
Oh,
yes, and they
okay.
were a national trade association.
I see. Okay. And how was your experience working? Because I think that was your first foray into government relations, right? So what did what did you experience during that position?
I think it was an amazing way to start because it was we were in the middle of a massive battle. We had just, when I say we, the association and the industry that I was representing had just lost a Supreme Court battle. And so we had to recover that ground through legislation. And it was a very key point for my industry. And it was really whether my industry would be able to grow anymore or whether they would wither on the vine. So it meant everything to them to get this done. So it was scary because I'd never lobbied before. I wasn't the only lobbyist, fortunately. I mean, it was way too big of an issue to only have one lobbyist. But there were four of us, four lobbyists, and the other three, had been long lobbying much longer than I had. So it was, thankfully, they had all kinds of experience. And we also had teams of other people around us, whether it was public affairs, regulatory affairs, et cetera. But it was a big fight. It was very high profile. It was terrifying. But we ended up winning. So it was very exciting.
And at what point did you move, like, to North Carolina?
Well, we moved actually to New Mexico first, and I lobbied at the state level for the same organization. And it was interesting because we had the same fight at the state level that I just helped to win at the federal level. So I, did the same fight in New Mexico. And, and that time around, it's a much smaller thing. So it was me as the lobbyist. And I, had to shepherd that alone. But of course, you have, you're always engaging your members and having them lobby with you, et cetera. So yeah, we ended up winning that one too. So it was
Oh.
fun to do it from federal to state.
No, nice. Okay. So how did you, what was your journey to North Carolina?
Well, there was another stop to California.
Oh.
And we, my when I say we, my husband and I, we moved there to Silicon Valley, and we both at that point were with Intel, and he was on the business side. I was doing government relations for Intel, so I did state and federal government relations for them. So, at times I was in Sacramento, and then other times I'd be in DC. But again, with it being a large company, I was not the only lobbyist. We had, a team of people around.
And then did you move to North Carolina?
Okay, sorry, it froze up a little bit.
That's okay.
So yeah, from California, then we moved to North Carolina. And
And
then, yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead.
so I will say though, I started when I worked for the company in North Carolina. I was doing federal government relations for them, but and state government relations, but not in North Carolina. They already had someone doing North Carolina, so I was helping them in Western states. I managed California, Arizona, and Washington state for them.
I see. Okay. And is there a difference in working as a lobbyist for an association or as against an organization like Intel? I mean, is there a difference in how you work?
Yes, like when the trade association, you were very much there's a lot more grassroots activism that is behind you, and you often have those people representing with you. At the corporate level, it's often not, you don't have that same sort of grassroots thing going on. It's you have the CEOs who you are helping to prepare to go meet with, a US senator, et cetera, or at the state level as well. So it's just probably more form. I don't know how. It's just a different type of client base. The corporate sway that you have behind you is often more in the form of PAC money and that sort of thing. And then at the grassroots level, it's more about individual votes.
Interesting. And if you had to like distill all the information on the wisdom you had towards lobbying, what would be the one key thing that a lobbyist should do?
I think, transparency is obviously a very important thing. I think follow through is also extremely important. I will see many opportunities that people will miss because, they've been asked to, maybe there's some information that they need to, someone's asked for it, a member of Congress or a legislator, and maybe they get around to it, but they might take a few days or never. And it's a real missed opportunity. You don't build trust that way because they're waiting to hear back from you. But even if they had kind of forgotten about it, you're missing an opportunity to keep building a relationship with them because they are offering you another touch point, and you need to take it for so many different reasons.
Interesting. So with that, we move into the last segment where you get the opportunity to talk anything about your future. I mean, where do you see yourself 5 years down the line?
Well, I've taken the last several years to explore my interest in writing, and once I started having children, I didn't want to travel and have the crazy hours that I tended to have with lobbying. And I thought, writing just sounded like a way that could be more manageable with the schedule and doing something that I'd always been curious about. And so I did, did a lot of freelance writing and wrote some articles and things that I'm really proud of. And now I'm in a back in the corporate world, but in publishing, just learning something completely new and different.
Nice.
And it's there are definitely parallels with lobbying. It's really funny when you think about it. But I've never stayed far away from government relations. I have stayed in close touch with, good friends in the industry, usually people I had worked with closely. I think just about every day from my boss, who was the first trade association I worked for. We're, always in contact. So it's, because I have a genuine interest in policy and the whole thing, I'm always following it. So if I ever were to go back to it, it would be like a duck to water, it would feel really good. I just have to, my children are still here, and I want to make sure I'm, even though I'm working full time, I'm still able to manage my time so I can be with my children when they need me.
Good. And with that, I would like to conclude this podcast. And I'm going to ask you a philosophical question to end this conversation. How would you define happiness?
I think it's being able to look at everything, whether it's the past or the present, and to recognize all the things to be grateful for, and to really not just be grateful because that's what the world tells you, but to really recognize it and to want to share it with the people around you. I think that's, the definition of being happy, and you can do that no matter how much money you have in the bank.
That's a wonderful way to end this conversation, Ellen. I'm truly grateful that you take the time to be here with us. Thanks again for being here.
Oh, thank you, Deepak.